Welcome to the Sadler Lectures podcast. Responding to popular demand, I'm converting my philosophy videos into sound files you can listen to anywhere you can take an MP3. If you like what you hear and want to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. I hope you enjoy this lecture. Towards the end of his discussion of ethics in Chapter 6 of Language, Truth, and Logic, A.J. Ayer is going to make yet another rather startling claim, namely that ethics as a discipline is really just sort of a sub-discipline of the social sciences. And by the social sciences, he has in mind in his own time sociology and psychology, which kind of complement each other. Psychology tends to be focused on the individual, although of course there's group psychology and we can go on with that. Sociology tends to be focused on society and groups, and both of them are viewed by somebody like Ayer as if they're purely empirical sciences. What makes them a science is that they observe, in the case of psychology, the feelings, the correlated thoughts, the experiences of persons, and then try to come up with some sort of hypotheses about them that can be empirically verified or falsified. Sociology does something similar, but for groups, they're also, in the time that he's writing, quite given to using mathematical models to analyze things, to tabulate data, which still goes on a lot today. We could probably also place into this category of the social sciences things like economics, anthropology, at least to some degree, depending on which anthropological approach or theory we're talking about, political science insofar as political science is less theory and more application, which looks a lot like sociology, criminology, of course, which spins out of sociology, all of these areas that are applying a sort of scientific viewpoint on human beings to study their behavior. And so not just their behavior, but also beliefs, values, customs, changes over time. What wouldn't fit in there would be, say, history or the arts or anything like that, the humanities. So Ayer says, towards the end of this section, ethical philosophy consists in saying that ethical concepts are pseudo-concepts, that is, false concepts, not really concepts, more nonsense than actually even false, and therefore unanalyzable. They're intractable to philosophy. So we can't really have any meaningful ways of resolving moral disagreements. They're really just based on our emotions or our moral sensibilities, as he says, which is really a factor of the moral education or conditioning which we have received. So he says, because of this, that there is no such thing as ethical science as an elaboration of a true system of morals. So we don't mean that there's no such thing as ethical science, as in you can't do science ethically, although, maybe you can't, according to Ayer, either. Or ethical just means like in accordance with what the Institutional Review Board okays or something along those lines if we analyze what the statement means. It means that ethics itself cannot be scientific. It cannot be something that is known in such a way as to provide objectivity and clarity in the way that the sciences typically do. So he says that the further task of describing the different feelings that the different ethical terms are used to express and the different reactions that they customarily provoke, that is a task. And here he singles out the psychologist, but we could think of the social scientist in general. He says, as ethical judgments are mere expressions of feeling, there is no way to determine the validity of any ethical system, and in fact, no sense asking whether any such system is true. All we can actually do, and this is where the social sciences come in, all we can actually do is to ask what are the moral habits of a given person or group of people and what causes them to have precisely those habits and feelings. And he says this falls wholly within the scope of the existing social sciences. So notice what he's saying. There's a descriptive side to it. What are the actual mores or habits of association of passions, feelings, drives, what goes on within a given person or a given group or a society? And what produced those? Now, the what produced those is a little bit of a different inquiry, isn't it? It's one thing to describe and say, well, from everything that we can tell, having done some polling, it appears that everybody here is in favor of drinking water, and the people over there, less in favor of drinking water. On a 1 to 5 Likert scale, you know, those very much in agreement to very much in disagreement, those things that you do in surveys, the people over here had a 4.9 average for drinking water. The people over here had only a 3.6, which means they're very ambivalent about it. Okay, so that's descriptive. And we can say similar things with stealing. The people over here are ambivalent about whether stealing is wrong, whereas the people over here think it's definitely wrong. Figuring out where those beliefs came from is a bit of a different type of inquiry, and Ayer is kind of glossing over this very quickly, although he's going to give us some interesting examples that show us what this might look like in just a bit. But the point is, the things that we traditionally associate with ethics then would fall within the scope of the social sciences, and the social sciences done in a very interesting way where they cannot engage in any sort of moralizing on their own part. Now, you should ask yourself, does this really look like the social sciences of even Ayer's time, let alone our own time? Is there something like a complete agreement among psychologists, sociologists, even economists about exactly what theories to use to understand things? And the answer is no. As a matter of fact, the social sciences are a hodgepodge of many different approaches. But they do offer some possibilities. What about other things? He says, ethics is just a branch, nothing but more than a department of psychology and sociology. And then he says, well, what about casuistry? This comes from the word casus in Latin, right? And it means looking at particular instances or cases. And typically the word casuistry was used in a bad sense to mean trying to get yourself out of the rigorousness of moral systems. So you'd like inquire into the particular case and say, oh, there's a lot of exceptions here. Ayer doesn't actually mean something quite like that in this case. He says, in case anyone thinks we're overlooking the existence of casuistry, we can remark that casuistry is not a science. Now notice what he does say it is, a purely analytical investigation of the structure of a given moral system. In other words, he says, it's an exercise in formal logic. So you have a system laid out, and then you analyze that and you say, well, that's what the system actually does consist in. So he gives some interesting examples here of how this sort of psychological inquiry might actually work. And you notice that the examples that he picks and the way that he frames it is not really something particularly new. These explanations go all the way back into the 19th century and perhaps even before that. But he's providing some examples of what might tell us why people have the moral systems or beliefs or commitments that he does. So he says, we would like to account for the Kantian and hedonistic theories of morals. And then he says, well, if we investigate it, what do we discover? Now, we should actually think about this. Are these, by Ayer's own methodology, really all that verifiable? Or is he, you know, kind of spinning out a hypothesis here? So he says that fear of God's displeasure, both conscious and unconscious, and fear of the enmity, the hatred of society, are one of the chief causes of moral behavior, right? So he's actually skipping over beliefs, and he's talking about moral behavior. Why do people behave morally? Because either consciously or unconsciously, that is without even registering it, they're afraid of God. Maybe there is no God, of course. It's just a figment of their imagination. Or they're afraid of society. And society does exist, right? Other people. So he says that these sorts of fears are, in fact, why, to many people, moral precepts present themselves as categorical commands. And then he says, as one finds also, the moral code of a society is partly determined by the beliefs of that society concerning the conditions of its own happiness, or in other words, that a society encourages or discourages given conduct by the use of moral sanctions based on what it does to society as a whole, thereby promoting altruism and suppressing egoism, we wind up with hedonistic or eudaimonistic ethics. So because society presses itself upon on us and says, you know, this sort of behavior is conducive to, you know, whatever's good for society, prospering, more people living, not having traffic snarls or something like that, whatever it happens to be, providing us with more M&Ms if that's really what we're into, having more chocolate, whatever it happens to be, the connection between morality and happiness here is what gives us hedonistic or eudaimonistic ethics. And on the other hand, we have the sort of Kantian, categorical, deontological ethics, he says, just as the moral theory of Kant is based on the fact that moral precepts have, for some people, the force of inexorable commands. And then he says, as each of these theories ignores the fact that lies at the root of the other, both can be criticized as one-sided, but this is not the main objection. Their essential defect is that they treat propositions which refer to the causes and attributes of our ethical feelings as if they were definitions of ethical concepts. So Eyre has to get in one more time saying, listen, neither the eudaimonistic or hedonistic ethics nor Kantian ethics are really grasping what ethics is about, which is basically just feelings. Feelings, sentiments, and our expressions of them, and attempts to get other people to see things the same way as us. So psychology, if this is indeed psychology, allows us a window into understanding how these moral systems arise. And we could have similar things for, like, you know, how did the idea of natural law come in? Or, you know, if we're thinking about Confucius ethics, why did they arrange things in this way in Chinese and then in the vast other cultures influenced by the Chinese culture, right? And we could go on and on and on. But the basic point is we can do some sort of analysis, some sort of reconstruction after the fact to explain where these ethical concepts and commitments come from. But they're ultimately just pseudo-concepts when we get down to the level of analysis, except insofar as the social sciences handle them and then tell ethics, here's what we've got. So ethics, for Eyre, ultimately becomes a sort of subdivision or subdiscipline of the social sciences and doesn't have any genuine scope of its own. Special thanks to all of my Patreon supporters for making this podcast possible. You can find me on Twitter at Philosopher70, on YouTube at the Gregory B. Sadler channel, and on Facebook on the Gregory B. Sadler page. Once again, to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. Above all, keep studying these great philosophical works.